Tonight we're going to do a very special edition of our Rav Dessler psychology shiur, not so much psychology in the literature, because Yom HaShoah by itself really demands and deserves the bulk of our attention and our focus. Rav Dessler, we're going to read two essays tonight written by Rav Dessler, both of which address the Holocaust. Essays are in different volumes of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, and we're going to see if we can combine them together to really discuss another element of the Shoah. We obviously want to dedicate tonight's learning for an Eloi for the Neshamos of the 6 million plus Yidden who are brutally annihilated by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. Hopefully tonight's learning should not only be an Eloi for their Neshamos, but also the perpetuation of us never forgetting the atrocities committed by Hitler and his terrible followers. Something for us to always think about every single year. Yom HaShoah was last night, it was today. Definitely still on our minds. Definitely permeates all of our consciousness. We can't think of anything else today except for this terrible tragedy that's befallen the Jewish people that really lives on. Rav Dessler himself, who passed away in 1953, lived through the Holocaust but did not live through the Holocaust. He lived through the Holocaust in the sense that he was alive at the time of the Holocaust and wrote a lot about it in the 5 or 6 years after the Holocaust, I guess maybe 8 years. Passed away in 1953. In the 8 years after the Holocaust ended, he wrote a lot about it. I'm not familiar if he uses the term Shoah officially about the Holocaust. He calls it the Churban Europa, the Churban in Europe. That being said, Rav Dessler, who was in Lithuania in the 1920s, moved to England in 1928 because his father required medical treatment there. Rav Dessler was in England throughout the time of the Holocaust, where he was the head of the Gateshead Kollel in the early 1940s, and he did not directly experience threat as far as I know. But still, his Rebbeim, his mentors, the people he respected, Chafetz Chaim, who lived before the war, Rabbi Chana Wasserman, who he respected, who died in the war, he really was terribly affected by the news that he heard and the rumors that were going around. And he wrote about it afterwards. In the late 1940s, Rabbi Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, who was the Panovich Rav, brought Rav Dessler to Eretz Yisrael to be the Mashgiach Ruchani in Panovich in Bnei Brak, and that's where he stayed until his death in 1953. Rav Dessler wrote a lot about the Holocaust, a little bit about the state of Israel. We'll talk next week about Yom HaAtzmaut through his eyes, which is not directly how he addresses it, but even though Rav Dessler was more classically labeled as Haredi, by Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak was known for flying an Israeli flag on Yom HaAtzmaut every single year, and Rav Dessler certainly has appreciation for the Medina in some sense or another. One thing, a caveat we have to put out there is that, well, it's really two caveats. I know Ilan's going to ask about this if he's able to make it tonight, is that no matter what we talk about tonight, we are never, ever, ever going to be able to explain why the Holocaust happened. It's actually a chutzpah for us, toward Hashem and all the victims, to pretend to know why things happened, why the Holocaust happened, to pretend to understand or make sense of such a terrible, terribly senseless idea is not going to be our goal for tonight. And if we accidentally stumble across something that sounds like that, take it with a grain of salt. We don't mean to describe why things happen, but lessons that we can take, things of understanding. And the second caveat is, well, we're going to focus tonight on the spiritual churban. Let that definitely not overshadow the physical churban, the loss of so many millions of Jewish people and neshamos, which is honestly the greatest loss of all. So turning to our essays for tonight, Dessler has a very emotional, powerful essay where you can feel a dialectic, you can feel a balance of two strong emotions. First, he starts off with a lot of despair, and then he turns at the end of this first essay to a message of hope, which we're going to build on as we continue speaking. This is a Michtav Me'Eliyahu, Volume 1, on page 70. He calls this one Vayehi Achar HaChurban, and it was after the destruction. A quote from a pasuk in, just kidding, it's not a pasuk, it doesn't exist anywhere. Pasuk describes Vayehi Acharei HaMagefa, there is no pasuk that says Vayehi Achar HaChurban, but Rav Dessler writes it almost like a biblical story, almost like it's something for us to learn from, something for us to take stock of. And Rav Dessler writes, listen to the harrowing words that he writes. This is a person, I wish they would have written when this essay was composed. Very often on the bottom of each essay, they write what year he delivered it. This one doesn't say when he gave it. I don't know if he gave it the year of the Holocaust, the year after the Holocaust, 5 years later, but listen to how raw the emotions are. He writes, Davar achad pashut, one thing we know for sure, b'li shum chidush, and it doesn't sound like such a novel idea. Arashum b'kan, I'll write about it here. Simu levavchem banim chavivim, listen, my dear children. V'shem'uni heitiv, listen carefully. Lo kechol adoros darenu, we are living in a unique generation, he writes. Dor churbanhu, we live in a generation of destruction. Ba'avoneinu, because of our own sins. Hayim navin mahu dor churban? Do we even understand what it means? to live in a generation of destruction? Lo, lo navin v'lo nasig. We can't possibly begin to understand what that means. Gam lo na'amin ki afsharu. We couldn't even believe something like this was possible. Aval hare kein hu ba'emes. It did happen. Ha'osher shehayalanu. All the physical wealth that we had, charav ve'einenu, has been destroyed and no longer exists. Lamros asher tziyur ha'avar ha'ashir odenu kimochai lenochach einenu. Notwithstanding the fact that we can picture the wealth, the opulence, we can picture it, we can almost see it like it's standing in front of us. Eino ella avar ha-misrachik v'holech. It's just a further distancing image in our minds. Alva behove harei einenu. It's a thing of the past, moving further away, no longer exists. Ha-hove reikon, the present is full of emptiness. Oso ha-osha haruchani, all the spiritual wealth, which we're going to talk a lot about in the second essay for tonight. Also avir ha-yeshiva, the atmosphere of the yeshivas of Europe. Also ha-she'ifa ha-mitis, the true desires to strive for spiritual growth. Also halamdus, the power of learning that was achieved during those years in Europe, decades in Europe, centuries in Europe. Also yirah shamayim. We've all heard stories from our bubbies who grew up in Europe. Maybe they weren't as learned in text, but the sense of yirah shamayim that was. Also halavavios, the heartsickness. Halakol eila einan od imanu, einan. They're gone. They're missing. They've been wiped out. Kidoshenu halchu l'menuchos olam. Special people have been taken from us. L'makom asher lo yasigim od achurban. Thankfully, mercifully, they've been given refuge. They can no longer be destroyed again. Aval halo akedusha hitstarfa yimam b'mosam. But it feels that all the kedusha of Europe went with them. It's gone. Kam halavavios mesa yimayim. A sense of heartfulness, a sense of genuineness has disappeared. Halcha Shechina mikirbeinu. Feels like the Shechina, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has abandoned us and left. B'neinu lo yaru ha'etzleinu. V'im nesaper lehem me'es asher ra'inu anu. Our children never saw this. And if we tell them about what we've seen, the good old days, the high level of learning, level of spirituality, me'es asher bo chayenu, that we lived through, ach sipur yihi etzlem, is just a story to the kids who didn't witness it themselves. The Lomitzias, they didn't live the experience of seeing the yeshivas at their heights, of the spiritual growth of the generations in Europe. Anu halaro'inu adayin es gilu yashchina shabel vavos. We had the fortune, he writes, in the late 40s, maybe the early 50s, we had the great fortune of seeing what levels of Kedusha could be achieved. Avalheim eich yaruhu. How can the kids see it? Read this first paragraph, you get very depressed, which I guess is appropriate for Yom HaShoah. Sense of doom, a sense of hopelessness. Again, this is someone who lived through it in the sense of witnessing what was before and all the ashes and all just the emptiness that followed afterwards. Now he takes a turn. Amnam, hava, come, nechapes nab belibo seinu. Let's introspect. Hava, come, nesponim v'nevar. Let's take a moment to sit back and reflect and clarify. Hayem be'emes mesa ha'idalios legamre. Did the ideology... Did our mission, did our legacy really die out? O ulai, o denam if archesas banu. Maybe there's still a little bit of hope floundering around. Ulai, adai in efshar lahachiosa. Can we possibly revive any sense of idealism, any sense of passion, any sense of righteousness? Ulai. Maybe. O efshar lahashiv es hakedusha el pnei tevel. Is it possible? Can we, perhaps, bring back to the face of this earth any sense of Kedusha, of Shechina? Aval, im kazos nargish, od lo masnu. If we can accomplish that, if we're able to somehow bring back the Kedusha, to revitalize it, then we will not have been called fully dead. Vim nechaya banu es ha-she'ifa al ha-chayim. If we can revitalize the mission, and the drive, and the ambition, hari chayim hinenu, then we are still alive. If the vision is still alive, then we are still alive. We're only dead, he argues, if we give up hope, if we despair. Uve'emes nachshov na lama hisharnu b'chayim. Why did we, he writes, why were we lucky enough to survive? Lama hitzileinu Hashem. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu save us? Ha'im l'manames ha-she'eres chayi ha-kedusha asher b'kerbeinu. Was it so that we could finish out the job for Hitler, so we could put an end and kill out any sense of hope and snuff out any sense of life? Is it to pretend that we never saw it, to forget and cause others to forget all the things that were, all the levels that were achieved previously? Oh, Kichaya Nechya, if we are still living, Leman Hizkir V'Hachayos, as HaKedusha B'tachdonim, to allow the revitalization of this Kedusha in the world we live in. Anu, She'eris HaPleita, it's up to us who have survived. She'eris, the remainders. Hanitzilas min HaKol Asher Charav, who were spared from all the terrible that was wrought. Vayhi Achara Churba, now is the next chapter in Tanakh. Now is the next chapter in our lives. Now is the next chapter in Jewish history. And it was after the destruction. Mahal Lefaneinu, who's going to write the next chapter? Who is going to decide what comes next? Hitler's gone at this point. So who's going to write the next chapter? Ha'im lahamis gambanu es nitzotzos achayim hagedolim? Are we going to allow within ourselves the extermination of any sparks of life, of greatness? Nitzotzos chai haruach, a sense of spirituality and spirit. Lo! Lo! Lo b'shem ofen! Lo elef pa'amim! No! No! Never in 1,000 years! Ela es kol nafshenu nitan bar hatzalas haruach. Everything we have is all geared toward the idea of preserving the spirit. Kol chayenu yihu ach v'rak binyan hanechar avos. Everything we were spared was just for the purpose of being able to rebuild. Ach v'rak techiyas hamesim levad. What he calls techiyas hamesim. First paragraph, he describes death and destruction not only as something of the past, but potentially a doomsday scenario for that which is going on right now and for the future. Then he turns it around and he says, no, maybe we're here because we're supposed to pick up the pieces. In lanu inyan b'chol asher zulah zeh, there's nothing else for us to do. Hein, anu ra'inu adayin es gedulas hakedusha. We saw what was something he could say that we may not be able to say. He said, we saw firsthand the greatness that was built up in the yeshivos, in the communities. Mi yashuv yechayenem lo anachtu. Who is supposed to return to that state? Who is supposed to revitalize that sense of life, if not those who witnessed it? Ein acheres lefaneinu, there is no other. Ein asher yishava be'eineinu, no one else cares. Echad hu levaveinu. We have to be united in this. V'kulo sho'eif ach al techiyas chaya ruach, to revitalize this spirit. Lo yamas ruach haTorah b'dareinu b'shem ofen. We will not allow the spirit of the Torah, our legacy, our idealism, our mission, to falter in any sense. V'im gam gadal haChurban, if the destruction was beyond what we've ever seen in Jewish history, nigadel kulanu yachad es habinyan l'umaso. If the destruction was so great, then the need for rebuilding is so great. Neda na barur, we have to know with complete clarity, ki em nimsor es nafsho seinu alav kidabainan, if we give it the proper level of commitment and sacrifice that it requires. Gam b'neinu yiru od es hakedusha kasher ra'inu. In the beginning, started off, what are our kids going to ever know? They never saw this. Our kids will never be able to witness the greatness that was. And in the second half, where he picks up the pieces and he says, it's our responsibility, those of us who have seen it, to rebuild it, to reestablish Jewish life and Jewish faith in the wake of terrible destruction and tragedy, so that our kids will be able to see the continuity. And they will, children will one day see Jewish communities thriving, Jewish schools thriving, Jewish camps thriving, Jewish shuls thriving, something that seemed impossible 75 years ago. Od yakiru b'neinu es ruach Yisrael saba shebi yeshiva. They'll once again see the greatness of leaders of Rashi Yeshiva. Od yitbalu bo, they'll immerse themselves in the olam ha-yeshivos. Od yinshamu bo, they'll live and breathe a Torah lifestyle. Od yichyu b'chayim asher chayinu. And they will live the life that we once lived. And he says, imkein ru'uyim lanu achayim. If that's what our mission is, we deserve to be alive. We deserve to be alive if we view this as our mission to continue to rebuild and not to give up. If we're going to give up, we are facing death ourselves. We are going to exterminate ourselves. It's a powerful idea. Who can tolerate and withstand and endure the terrible pain of the death of idealism? Hargashas histalkos achayim hapanimiyim, the loss of the spirituality. Achein adayim biyadeinuhu, it's not lost. We have the opportunity. Mesiris nefesh amitis nidreshes, we need to have legitimate sacrifice. Amitis, literal, lo melitzas, lo meduma. Not an analogy, not an exaggeration or an expression. We need to have mesiras nefesh. Hava, come. Nivnas atzmeinu, let's build ourselves up. Nivnas benenu, build up our families. Nivna mostos la Torah, rebuild Jewish institutions. Nivna yeshivos, nashiv leva vos, abanim la Torah. Let's allow a structure to return people to an elevated religious state. Na'avod kasheh. It's going to be hard work. Let's do it. B'Hashem atov yatzliach b'yadeinu. May God give us the strength and the success. Hava nischazek v'nisodei. Let's take encouragement. Hava nala. Let's go up. Hala. Onward. Lamala. Further up. Lo nasogachor. Let's not retreat. Let's not back down from this challenge. Listen to the way he speaks. Not sure exactly who his audience was. Was it Yeshiva Bachrim? Was it other community leaders? Was it just an audience of people? Is it us? It sounds like he's speaking to people living through it themselves, but think about for us what this means. This dialectic to on the one hand be broken, to be lost, and at the same time to be able to recognize the vitality, the ability to live on. Rabbi Galler mentioned so beautifully last night at the Yom HaShoah program that the reason we light candles is to symbolize that the neshama, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, the neshama lives on. Hitler couldn't take that from us. Am Yisrael Chai. He thinks he can snuff us out and be able to wipe us out off the face of the earth. But the neshama he wasn't able to touch. Rav Dessler really is grappling with the question of children, the next generation. What's going to be? How are they going to see this? How are they going to be able to carry on the legacy? It reminds me of a beautiful idea Moshe Feinstein writes about a lot in his commentary on Chumash, Drash Moshe. On the Pasuk and Parshas Nitzavim, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bnei Yisrael in Perek Lamed, Hachayim v'hamaves nasati lefanecha. I have given you a choice of life or death, habracha v'haklala, blessing or curse. And Moshe says, Uvacharta b'chayim. I'm telling you of the choices you have in front of you. Life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life. L'man tichya atah v'zarecha, so you and your children will be able to live. Why do they need that choice spoon-fed to them? You can have life and blessing, or you can have death and destruction. Psst, psst, choose life. You know, I used to study magic tricks as a kid. Don't tell anybody. I used to study magic tricks as a kid. People were always surprised. Wow. And the more I studied card tricks, the more I came to learn that the real magic isn't that the magician can somehow find the card or necessarily read through the card or read your mind and have what the card is. Very often, they're forcing the card on you. By the time you pick the card, they've already given you the card that they want. It's what's called in magic, a forced choice. Is that what this is, a forced choice? What kind of balance is that? What kind of two different options is that? I'm giving you the option of life and blessing, or death and destruction, and choose life so you and your kids can live. Moshe Feinstein says that it's not really a question of living versus dying. It's two different types of living. Rav Moshe writes, there's a life full of life, of blessing, of excitement, of enthusiasm for mitzvos, and there's a lifeless life. There's a life that's really death, where mitzvos feel like a curse. Tuition is expensive. Pesach is hard. Three day yantav is really, really, really hard. It's hard. It's hard to be a yid. Es shver tu zayin a yid. Rav Moshe said that expression, es shver tu zayin a yid, it's hard to be a Jew, was responsible for the destruction of so many Jewish families, so many children who did not remain firm like their parents. It's because the children grew up in a home es shver tu zayin a yid. Rav Moshe was asked by people, how could it be? You have families who came to America who sacrificed everything to keep Shabbos. They lost their jobs, found a new job every 6 days. Every Shabbos they would lose their job because they were most nefesh to keep Shabbos. And children who grew up in homes like that chose not to keep Shabbos. What? The parents sacrifice everything to keep Shabbos? And kids growing up in a home like that don't want to keep Shabbos when they have the choice to? How could that be? And there were other families who did not keep Shabbos perfectly. They formed Hashkama Minyanim. They daven really early Shabbos morning. They made Kiddush. And they took the subway to work. They took the bus. Because they couldn't lose their job. They didn't have that kind of faith. And their kids grew up to keep Shabbos. How could that be? Those who were moser nefesh, to lose their job to keep Shabbos, their kids went off the derech. They didn't keep Shabbos when they had a choice. But the ones who kept Shabbos while going to work on the bus, their kids grew up keeping Shabbos. How could that be? And Moshe Feinstein writes about this so many times. He says, the kids who grew up in a home where the father came to the Shabbos table every week and said, you see what I do for Shabbos? My family can't afford to feed itself. I have to look for another job interview on Sunday. This is impossible. This is so painful. Kids who grew up in a home, yes, the father sacrificed, but the father felt like he was sacrificing. Kids got the impression that it's miserable, that it's broken, that it's dead. And when they got older and they had a choice, they said, why would I want to keep something that ruined my family's life, that broke my father, that made my mother cry every single Shabbos afternoon? But the families who weren't as strong in terms of keeping Shabbos at all costs, but they made an effort to daven Hashgama, to have Kiddush Shabbos morning. Again, strictly speaking, in a bubble, maybe that's not as impressive as those who were giving up their jobs to keep Shabbos. But they came home and they celebrated Shabbos however they could. And it's that message the kids got. Moshe says, that's pshat in the pasuk. Moshe tells the people, you have a choice in front of you. Two different types of life. You can have a life that's of life and vitality and blessing, where mitzvos feel like life. They feel like a blessing. The other option is mavis and klala, where you're living, but it feels like you're dead. And it feels like mitzvos are dead. And the observance is dead. And the observance is a curse. It's a terrible, terrible thing. The pasuk says, choose life. Choose a life of life. A life full of mitzvos. The only way you and your kids, the next generation, are going to be able to keep mitzvos is if you live mitzvos with life. Viewing it as a bracha as opposed to a klala. Not to say ashfer to zayin yid, but to say it's geschmack to be a yid. It's hard to be a yid. And it's also beautiful to be a yid. Now obviously we cannot judge anyone who lost their faith after the Holocaust or experiencing any hardship. It's obviously not our place to say anything about that. But in terms of continuity, Rav Dessler is making this point so heart-wrenchingly. What's going to be of the kids? What's going to be? How are they going to see this? He says, life and death in this context about the future is our attitude. If we say what's done is done, everything is lost, we can't possibly recapture what once was, then the kids are going to die out. The idealism is going to dry out. But if we can come with a sense of life, that our whole purpose, Rav Dessler is saying, is to be alive, to be Mechaya Mason, to bring back that sense of mission, then our kids can live, he says. We can give them something to live for. We can give them an idealism, give them a sense of an ideology that they can rally around and appreciate and love and they can sacrifice themselves for. That's our first essay for tonight. What do we think about this? This idea that life and death is in some sense, not in the physical sense, but in a spiritual sense, life and death is in our hands. Despite all the tragedies that were, we have the choice to choose to pick up the pieces and to re-inspire without judging anyone who's lost, given all that they've suffered. But in terms of continuity for the kids, for the next generation, it's about the attitude with which we're going to promote what comes next. What do we think about that? Any thoughts? Yeah.
You need to have an attitude with gratitude.
Attitude of gratitude. It's always something to be grateful for, even at the same time when we can express pain. That's the dialectic, right? We can hold both at the same time. They're both true. Express gratitude. Absolutely. Other thoughts? You can hear the raw emotion in Rav Dessler's writings, both for the pain and for the optimism that he spins toward at the end. So how do we do this? How do we revitalize some of the spiritual loss? And again, without taking away that the main focus has to be in Yom HaShoah, of the physical loss of life, there's no greater spiritual loss than the loss of Yiddish neshamos. But in terms of focusing on the spiritual destruction, Dessler has an essay in volume 3, and we'll turn to page 3 of our booklets now. On the bottom of the page, and here they gave us the date. He delivered this in Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak in 1951. A good number of years after the Holocaust. But still pretty fresh and raw. And he writes about the spiritual destruction. We have to repeat again. We will never understand the ways of Hashem. Anytime we try to look at Churban and say, what lessons can we learn? It's not definitive. It's not meant to pretend to play God. It's just meant for us to have something to rally around, something for us to make meaningful going forward. And he asks a very strong question. A question that really should apply not only to the Holocaust, but to many Jewish tragedies over the millennium. And that question is, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow tragedy to rob us of spiritual opportunity? It's one thing, and again, let's put this in perspective. We're not going to understand the ways of Hashem, how anything bad happens. But if we're going to learn that loss of wealth or loss of life is meant to shock us to our core, to be better, to be holier, to be spiritual, or then how could any tragedy include the burning of Shas, the loss of the Beis HaMikdash? the destruction of the spiritual centers of yeshivas and Rashi Yeshiva and Sfarim in Europe. What are we supposed to do with that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're giving us a lesson to be better, to daven more, to do teshuvah, but in the process, you're robbing us of the things that we need to be better and do teshuvah and be better. So how can that be? How can tragedy strike at the core of our spirituality? What is the lesson? What are you taking from us, if not the very things we're trying to accomplish? So we could at best try to rebuild it just as good and fall short and surpass it, maybe, but you're taking away the things that we need to be better. What are you doing to us? That's the question he grapples with here in this essay over here. The name of the essay is Chovas HaPanimios Petekufas Churban Merkazei HaTorah. The obligation to work on a sense of genuine, internalized Yiddishkeit in the era of destruction of the centers of Torah. He writes, Darkei Hashgachasa Shel HaKadosh Baruch Shel Hashem Yisbarach Nisgavim Mimenu Milahavinam. This has to be said. We're never going to really understand how Hashem runs the world. The Raksa Neida Ki Yisharim Darkei Hashem. We can all affirm HaKadosh Baruch knows what he's doing. And everything he does in some way or another makes sense in the master plan. Amnam Me'idach Gisa Heim Tzrichem Talmud. We have to really study this. Ladas Mahin Chovoseinu Shedarkei Hanagaso Baos Lamdeinu. We have to ask, what lessons can we learn from what happened? Lo'or Zeh, in this light, Nistaka B'Parshas HaGalos V'Achorban. Let's look at the exile and the destruction, referring to the Holocaust. L'Hasek Mimena Maskanos L'Maisa. What lessons can we draw? And he asked a very tough question. How can there be instances of destruction of spiritual centers? Mesiras gedolei haTorah v'hayira, righteous people being given over, mashpieha v'oskeha, those who inspired others, who were involved in the physical and the spiritual betterment of people, bidei tzar, they're handed over to the crematoria. How can that be? Aside from the ethical, moral question of what's God doing to righteous people, that's not the focus of this essay. But the question is, taking away the spiritual people and centers, the lama heim bayim, what are they for? Bishlama yisuri v'tzaros hagalos, every other suffering as painful and as confusing as it is, bayim l'chaper l'marik avonos, in some way or another, is meant to better us. Avol churban haruchnias? What could possibly be a function, any function for us to grapple with, even just to chew on and think about, without getting to the MS, obviously, but just food for thought. Where are we supposed to begin with the destruction of Churban Ruchnias? So on the next page, he quotes an idea from the Ramchal, Ramosha Chaim Luzzatto from Italy, famous author of the Mesilas Yesharim in the 1700s. The Ramchal asked this question, not about the Holocaust, obviously, but about general shas burnings and spiritual destruction. How can that be? The Ramchal writes, "Kasher anu yodim shekol ma shekadosh baruch hu oseh liYisrael, hakol hu lehitiv lahem. Whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu does, whatever appears good, whatever appears bad, appears ugly, appears painful, it's always ultimately for our good. Veich nitzayer b'datenu. How are we supposed to wrap our heads around sheyia tov liYisrael, that there's something, a lesson to be taken? So many of our gzeros against us, in the Hanukkah story, and there's many examples in the Gemara of Shas HaShmad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows an enemy to restrict us from learning Torah, the Romans, Rabbi Akiva. He quotes with the Inquisition, Shas burnings, how can that be? And the Ramchal says that in some way or another, since it's a spiritual deficiency, it's a spiritual suffering, it's a spiritual being robbed of our access to Torah and its leaders, it's meant to be mechaper on internal sins, like Avodah Zarah. By Avodah Zarah, even thoughts of Avodah Zarah are a bad thing, and maybe because we have some things that require a cleansing of the inside, we need a punishment that affects us on the inside. Not a loss of a house, a loss of a person, but a loss of our neshama. The neshama is missing something. If you look down where the arrow is, he has a beautiful explanation about what this means in such powerful terms, where the arrow is. Benazir es ha'inyan. He explains what the Ramchal is really driving at. What exactly is the takeaway from the loss of spiritual centers? Yesha adam nimtza b'sviva ruchanit tova. A person might find themselves in an institution or a community or in a group where spirituality is flowing. There's shirim, there's davening, there's mitzvos, there's chesed, there's so many good things going on. Shekulam devekim ba'oskim beruchnias. Everyone is involved in such wonderful, lofty ideas. Umachshivim es inyane haruchnias v'as oskeha, and people have proper respect and proper priorities for these matters. Kisha'az nimshach ha'adam acharei haruchnias. When that person who's caught up in this environment, caught up meaning they find themselves going along with the flow, it could be that there's no real depth, there's no real genuineness, there's no real sincerity behind those davenings and those acts of chesed and those Talmud Torahs. All of us are influenced by our environments. All of us like to fit in with the crowd. Conformity. We like to do what's popular. We like to do the things that don't have a standout as a negative person. People are drawn after their environments. A person like this may not have any actual lishma. They may not really truly feel a sense of davening or learning because this is what everyone's doing. It's the thing to do. And what he really believes deep down is at odds with what he's doing, given that he has to do it because everyone else is doing it. Even if it doesn't feel like it's a burden, but maybe it's just a matter of rote, it's just a matter of an empty shell of an action. What if everyone in the community is doing that because everyone in the community is doing that? And they're all doing it because everyone else is doing that. Yachalhu amnam b'meshech hazman, over time it's possible, le'et'alot shema'asav yiyu p'nimiyem, he might think that he's acting with great sincerity. Aval lezet tzarech amal v'avod haraba, but he really has to work hard. It's hard for a person to develop a sense of lishma when the entire environment is doing it anyway. So there's a very strong lolishma reason to do it, because he wants to fit in, he wants to be popular, he wants to be well-liked. When a person finds him or herself in a situation where there's not much going on, there's not a lot of shirim, there's not a lot of learning, there's not a lot of davening, there's not a lot of minyanim, she'asru lomo Torah, right? Let's say a scenario where the Romans have made it forbidden for people to learn Torah. And it's illegal for a person to be religious. And the whole environment is now counter-religiosity. People are now forbidden to engage in these mitzvahs. If then a person is able to work hard to strive, a person who serves when it's not the popular thing to do, when it's not the flow, when it's not the common, when it's not even safe to do so, that's how a person develops a true sense of genuine avodas Hashem. Al yedei avoda penimis, zo yichupru hachotim hachatayim shebepenimius. When the Ramchal said that this type of destruction allows a person to achieve kapara for a lack of sincerity, for a lack of true belief in Hashem, it has to be the kind of Torah learning and Shmiras HaMitzvahs that can't just be chalked up to rote or habit or environmental factors. Now, what is he saying? He's saying that Kadosh Baruch Hu destroys centers of yeshiva so it should be hard for people to learn? Again, we don't know why Hashem does things that seem to us to be destruction. So it's not our job to explain why people die or why yeshivas are knocked down. We're not touching that issue. But in terms of lessons for us, what could be possibly a spiritual trajectory that involves a complete annihilation or destruction of the institutions and communities that make it so easy to be from? He's saying because if it's easy to be from, then it's not as powerful as when it's hard to be from. Now, I know the question on our minds is, what happened on Chazal saying, mitoch lolishma balishma? Isn't there a value to starting with something that is lolishma? And in the process, we're going to eventually become lishma. He asked that question on page number 5, on the next page. We're not going to read it inside. But essentially, what he gets at with discussing this question is, lo lishma serves a function. There is a purpose of lo lishma. And lo lishma is for a person who has an end game in mind. The person has an end game in mind. The goal is to eventually be more sincere, more genuine. And for now, it means you have to do it because you're paid to teach Torah. Or you do it now because it's the cool thing to do. So if you do it because of the lishma, but there's an end game of lishma in mind, then Chazal say, mitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma. But what if the entire system, at its core, is lo lishma? No one is sincere, no one is genuine, no one is actually feeling the panemius of the matter. He argues that is not the kind of lo lishma that eventually leads to lishma. Because there's no end game in mind. There's no desire for a person to be better because everyone's doing exactly the same thing. And there's no challenge to observe it when everyone is doing exactly the same thing. When it comes to the raw foundations of Yiddishkeit, the raw foundations cannot be lo lishma. They tell the story about the Vilna Gaon, who was consulted by his Talmud, Rav Chaim of Volozhin, who wanted to build a Volozhin yeshiva, which later became the famed Volozhin yeshiva. And the story goes, when Rav Chaim Volozhin came to the Vilna Gaon, his Rebbe, to ask for his blessing to build the yeshiva, the Vilna Gaon said no. Rav Chaim Volozhin was devastated. He had this vision of making a yeshiva, going to be the greatest yeshiva in Europe. He was so excited to make this, and the Vilna Gaon said, no, don't make the yeshiva. He was crushed. All his enthusiasm, all the work he had done, crushed. A year later, he picked up the pieces and he decided to try one more time. He went back to his Rebbe, to the Vilna Gaon, and he said, I'd like to ask you one more time for a bracha to build the yeshiva. And the Vilna Gaon said, Besimcha Rabba, you have my blessing. I think it's a wonderful idea. And he said, where was this blessing a year ago when I asked you? Why did you say no then and why are you saying yes now? And the Vilna Gaon reportedly responded, he said, I could tell a year ago you were driven by a lot of your own enthusiasm. It wasn't necessarily lishma. It was because it was a cool idea. It was a beautiful idea. It was a laudable idea. People would give you credit. It'd be the Rav Chaim Volozhin or yeshiva. And I felt that that's not the way to establish a yeshiva. Yes, Chazal say mitoch shelo lishma balishma, but you don't establish a foundation of a yeshiva entirely on lo lishma. After a year, when the idea cooled off and it was no longer as exciting to you, it was no longer something you were as passionate about, and you still wanted to do it anyway, that's when I said, now you're doing it lishma. You're doing it because you really want to, I can tell. And if you're going to establish a yeshiva, even when it's lishma, that's what's actually going to survive. Rav Dessler is telling us something along these lines. Again, with the impossibleness of being able to understand Churban of any sort, physical or spiritual, but just to understand that sometimes when we lose something spiritual, it is the greatest vehicle to be able to propel it forward. I'm thinking about a word I heard from my friend, such a beautiful idea. Rachmana Litzlan, when a person loses a relative, before the burial, a person has a status of aninus. A person is in the status of being an onen. An onen is actually pater from mitzvahs. It is actually forbidden for an onen to do mitzvahs. An onen is not allowed to do brachos, make brachos, not allowed to daven, not allowed to put on tefillin. They're not allowed to, you know, murder and eat ham sandwiches. But any mitzvahs that say an onen is not only not required to do. Are we frozen on Zoom? No. Right? An onen is not only exempt, an onen is forbidden to make brachos. It's a good question during Sfiras Omer. A person's an onen, misses the day of Sfira. How does that work? Good question. But the question is asked, this is the time for a person to not do mitzvahs? They just experienced a loss. They want to introspect. Suddenly they're taking off from work and they're able to spiritually see the real priorities in life. The money and the kavod, those are falling away. Now they're in a moment of reflection and they're not doing mitzvahs? How can that be? Question we asked before. How can it be we're taking a break from spirituality? What do you want a person to do during this time? If not, to focus on Torah, they can't learn, they can't do mitzvahs, can't make brachos, can't daven, can't put on tefillin. What do you want from a person during this time? My friend has such a beautiful answer. I'm not sure if he was quoting someone, and if he was, I apologize to the person who originally said this. My friend said, at a time like this, it's a meaningful time to the onen, to the person experiencing grief. It's a time to stop and reflect what mitzvos are all about, and to stop and ask if their observance of mitzvos and brachos are by rote. When a person is an onen, and for a few hours or a day or so, they're not allowed to make brachos. If they find it hard to do that, because they take a cup of water, and they mumble something, and they say, oops, I wasn't supposed to make a bracha. That's not okay. The fact that mitzvos are so habitual, we make brachos without thinking about it. So at a time when we're not supposed to make a bracha, the bracha just comes tumbling out of our mouths, or we feel uncomfortable not to daven, not put on tefillin. That more than anything else, more than a person could focus on with the most beautiful bracha of all time, not making a bracha in that moment is a chance to stop and ask all the last 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, 100 years that I've been making brachos, are they just tumbling out of my mouth without thought? This is a time to stop and ask, what's it all about? As a person passes to the next world, and we're suddenly focused on priorities of mitzvos and what you can actually take with you, it's a time to stop and say, destroy the mitzvos. Destroy the brachos. Destroy the tefillin and the davening. Don't do those for a few hours, for a day or so. And then ask yourself, when you come back to it, during Shiva and beyond, can you now say with more kavana? Can you now say with more sincerity? Given that you've seen what it's like to not have it, to appreciate what you lost, and realize what may have been decades of doing it without really thought. This idea was very popular when COVID really started. Shul shut down, Nyanim were canceled, no Torah laning, Dvarim Shabakdusha, Kaddish Baruch Hu, and very often people were quoting a comment of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. In the late 1800s, in his Sefer Chorev, he has the following quote in his introduction. Rav Hirsch writes, "If I had the power, I would provisionally close all synagogues for 100 years. There was no plague and pandemic in his time, but on his own, he said, if I had the power, I would provisionally close all synagogues for 100 years. Do not tremble at the thought of a Jewish heart. What would happen? Jews and Jewesses without synagogues, desiring to remain from, would be forced to concentrate on a Jewish life and a Jewish home. The Jewish officials connected with the synagogue would have to look to the only opportunity now open to them, to teach young and old how to live a Jewish life and how to build a Jewish home on their own. All synagogues closed by Jewish hands would constitute the strongest protest against the abandonment of Torah in home and life. Closing the shuls," Rav Hirsch argued, "if he had the power, if it was up to him, he would have closed the shuls, not for a week, not for 2 years, for 100 years. Generations would have gone without going to shul, without having a minyan." I don't think they were having backyard minyanim. He was talking about not having minyanim for 100 years. What? What can you draw from the churban of spirituality? What you draw is this lack of reliance on the externals to do it for you. The gabbai will take care of it, the rabbi will take care of it, but in the personal home, there's no responsibility. To make it genuine, to make it real, to affect the panemius, it has to be something we can take home with us. To really get inside and fight for it and work for it, and not just go because everyone else is going, but to actually find a way to make it more meaningful. There were people who shared that their Kabbalah Shabbos is at home during March 2020, April 2020, one of the most meaningful Kabbalah Shabbos is that they've ever had before. More than the shuls. There was no choir, there was no chazan, no person talking behind them, which probably helped. It was a totally different experience to daven at your own pace, in your own sense, in your own space, with your families, without worrying about being too loud or having too many snacks. You can just daven with your kids. You could daven with your families, daven next to your spouse. It was a different experience. The quote-unquote closing, the annihilation, Rachmana Litzlan, of something spiritual, allowed for the opportunity to make it real again. Like the owning Rachmana Litzlan, the sudden aberration, the sudden loss of the opportunity to do mitzvahs in the normal way, called into question how much of our lives are really just happening by rote. And people said, this is a reset button. COVID's a reset button. We're going to change how we do weddings. Ha! We're going to change how we daven. Ha! We'll change how we do everything. Ha, ha, ha. How much of that is stuck? Some of the masks and outdoor minyanim have stuck. But how much of this newfound revitalization of davening, appreciation for Kriyas HaTorah, we'll never talk again during Kriyas HaTorah. Ha. But in those moments, it was, hey, the shutdown, as terrible as it is, as dangerous as it was, and we don't know why Hashem does terrible things that to us look terrible, we don't know. But in terms of what we gain from it, there is an opportunity to say, maybe we've been doing it by rote all this time. Which is obviously how we explain the Churban Beis HaMikdash. How could it be? If we're really going to be punished, don't take away the thing that we need to come back. Hashem says, you haven't really been using it. You've been going and offering your sacrifices, but the hearts are empty. Animal sacrifices. Where's the heart? You could say simply, so you don't deserve this, you don't deserve the temple. You're not using it anyway. But if that's what it's saying so much sharper, it isn't simply that you're not deserving of having this temple. It's that the way you're using it is only going to be able to change if you no longer have it. When you lose it, you'll have an appreciation for it. And more importantly, be forced to develop it on your own. We don't know why bad things happen, why this korban happened in this way, and who particularly suffered. We'll never understand that. But now that it happened, Rav Dessler is saying, to look at the spiritual loss, we have to ask ourselves, can we use this opportunity? Can we use Yom HaShoah to never forget not just the neshamos, beautiful people, families, children that were murdered, but also the loss of spirituality in a way that forced us to rebuild it. And the act of rebuilding and finding it anew itself builds character and builds a genuine sense of Avodas Hashem that is unparalleled by just keeping up the flow where everyone's doing it decade after decade. So let's put it together, connecting our two essays for tonight. We have to recognize that these spiritual losses are opportunities for reflections, to ask how much we really value them. If we choose life for us in the next generation, it has to be alive, not schwer. It has to be with geschmack. has to be an amazing opportunity for us to create life and bracha, as opposed to death and klala. Yom HaShoah is really a time to reflect on the churban and the drive to rebuild with more life, more vigor, more panemius. And in that way, if we take this opportunity to find ways in our own lives, find ways to rebuild things, find ways to say, how can I do this more genuinely? How can I stop doing it just because everyone else is doing it? How can I create a home, a space, a community where the children see we're doing it with life, we're doing it with excitement, we're doing it as a bracha. In that sense, we'll never, ever be extinguished. Am Yisrael Chai.